You're listening to the WTA Insider Podcast. Ready? Play.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the WTA Insider Podcast. I'm Courtney Nguyen, senior writer for WTA Insider at WTATennis.com, and I'll be your host on this podcast, where we take you closer to the players and all the action on the WTA Tour. Well, the Australian Open final is set, and it will be a must-watch showdown between Serena and Venus Williams. For the 28th time in their storied careers, the sisters Williams will duke it out on the tennis court in Saturday's final, playing with a slam trophy on the line for the 9th time in their epic careers. And there's even more on the line for Serena than just her record-setting 7th Australian Open title. A win on Saturday means she would finally break the open-era record for most slam singles titles, man or woman, which she currently holds with Stefanie Graf. Slam title number 23 would not only give her the outright record, but it would boost her back to the number one spot in the WTA rankings, overtaking current number one, Angelique Kerber. So there's a lot on the line for Serena on Saturday, but it's hard to argue that the sentimental story isn't her older sister, Venus, who at age 36 is back in a slam final for the first time in nearly 8 years, and her first at Melbourne Park since 2003. That was 14 years ago. Well, now it's time to bring in WTA web editor David Kane, who's in St. Petersburg at WTA HQ. Hello, David.
Hi, Courtney. Good day.
Oh, the accent still needs some work, and you're running
out
of time.
Has my Australian accent gotten any better? Better luck next year.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's going to take some time. It's all right. It's not an easy one to master. But David, we are on the precipice of yet another all-Williams final here at the Australian Open. And I guess my question to you is, did you ever think that Saturday would come? Did you think that we were ever going to see another Serena versus Venus Grand Slam final?
In the last 6 months, it definitely seemed more possible that we would see Venus in another Grand Slam final. And in terms of the Venus-Serena Grand Slam final rivalry, she was certainly the one who was the bigger question mark between the two, because obviously we've seen Serena in quite a few Grand Slam finals since Venus's last, which was in 2009, making the Wimbledon semifinal and then obviously being in the semifinal here. The odds seemed to be increasing. Did I think it would happen in Australia? Not until it became apparent that this court was playing at a Wimbledon-like quickness did I think it was possible that the two would meet in the final. This was traditionally one of Venus's weaker slam events. After making the final in 2003, she'd never made it past the quarters in 14 years. And so to see her in the final this year is surprising given her history, but certainly given the last few months and given the way the court has been playing, it's not entirely the biggest shock to see Venus and Serena competing for another Grand Slam title.
Yeah, I think we flagged this in our preview podcast when we started to look at the draw. And, you know, in my preview post, basically saying which players kind of won the draw, which players lost the draw, I had flagged Venus as one of the players that had won the draw. And she had a really nice first week draw. As it was on paper. And the biggest question mark was whether or not she was playing well enough to get through that draw. And on some level, it was somewhat, not heartening, but you know, you always, it's always nice to be right or to be somewhat confirmed in your suspicions. But, you know, Venus obviously in Auckland withdrew from that tournament after her first round match, citing right arm pain. There was quite a bit of work that had been done on that right arm in the lead up to the Australian Open. There were a lot of photos on the wire of her during her practice sessions on court, on Rod Laver Arena, Margaret Court Arena, of getting that arm kind of massaged mid practice quite a bit. And so she admitted multiple times during the tournament that she was very anxious coming into the Australian Open. She wasn't sure kind of whether her body was going to be able to do it. She had minimal match play. You know, maybe the confidence was kind of down, but she knew that she had worked really hard during the off season. She kind of relied on that. And she basically said, look, I got to try, you know, I mean, all you can do is try and see what happens. And so for Venus, you know, she took it one match at a time and got it all done in surprisingly, you know, straightforward fashion. You know, went into today's semifinal having not lost a set so far in the tournament, beat Mona Bartel, Duan Yingying, Stephanie Vergila, and Katerina Kozlova in the first round. And then finally, you know, was tested today by Coco Vandeweghe, who, it has to be said, I mean, watching that match unfold, it was a 2.5 hour match. It was amazing to see the power differential between Coco and Venus. Venus, obviously, we know, a powerful player, a big hitter of the ball. But against Coco, boy, she looked second best, you know, especially in that first set, which she lost in the tiebreak, and then was able to, you know, as if this tournament needed more twists and turns, you know, kind of fall into a little bit more of a defensive shell, play a little bit smarter with more depth, more width, and really kind of unravel Coco with more counterpunching and more grinding, and then really also stepped up her serve in a very big way, and that got her out of a lot of jams against Coco. But she finally drops a set against Coco in that first set in a tiebreak, and then reels it off in straight sets. And it was a tense match, but it was a great test. I have to say, going into the semifinals, I think you and I had talked about it, David. I really thought that Coco was going to come out on top. She's just been playing so well, you know, beat Angelique Kerber, beat Jeannie Bouchard, beat Garbiñe Muguruza, and really had been mowing down the field. But Venus stepped up. And, you know, for me, I agree with you. The last 6 months, her results have been right there. I mean, who knows what happens at the U.S. Open if she converts one of those match points against Karolina Pliskova, although she would have had to have played Serena in the semifinals if that were the case, had she kind of gone through the draw. But yeah, these sisters continue to amaze me. It's just a remarkable finale to what has been a really unexpected tournament.
Well, as she said after her first round, she's pretty good at tennis. So yeah. This should have surprised none of us. But yeah, certainly the way Coco was playing, there did seem to be this aura of invincibility and even inevitability that this was a level of tennis worthy of a first Grand Slam final. I think what we saw was the level of experience really exponentially rise on the other side of the net, where Coco was able to take advantage of perhaps the newer situations that Kerber was in, that Muguruza is still in, even Bouchard is in to a certain extent, not being able to close out that 4-2 lead in the third. Venus has been in these situations so many times, and it was almost like muscle memory at a point where she was able to click in, not make mistakes, and play really great tennis when she needed to, saving so many break points in that match that it was really just impressive overall.
Yeah, it was a great performance from Venus Williams, saving, 12 of 13 break points against Coco Vandeweghe, who, that's going to be a tough stat for Coco to swallow. 1 for 13 on break points in the match, had her opportunities, and played well. I mean, even with that 6-7, 6-2, 6-3 scoreline, it was a lot closer of a match, it felt like. In fact, once, you know, the match was over and I had to, like, sit down and, you know, write things up and write down the score, it wasn't until then that I realized that the score looked as lopsided in the second two sets as it did. It never felt that way. It felt like Vandeweghe was right there. She was, you know, constantly putting pressure on Venus's serve. And well, let's listen to both of them, actually. Here are the post-match press conferences. You'll hear from Coco Vandeweghe first, and Venus Williams, of course, after that.
Coco, what's your kind of overall feeling at this point about the match and about the way you played in general?
Probably straight after the match, I was pretty upset. I had a feel sorry for myself moment, what made me feel a lot better was when my team came over when I was in the gym, just sitting by myself. They came over, gave me a big hug. Each and every one of them told me how proud they were of how I competed out there and everything like that. So that kind of picked me up and made the situation feel a lot better, but I was very disappointed and upset.
Was the feel sorry for yourself moment after the match? It wasn't in the last couple of games?
No. It was after the match.
Coco, just on the disappointment, is it that a missed opportunity, just losing the match, not being able to play as well as maybe you thought you were going to? I mean, where does it kind of stick the most?
Missed opportunity and losing the match, I think, are probably the two blaring ones. You know, as far as not playing as well as I could have, it goes along with tennis. You're going to have good days and bad days, but you just have to adjust as best you can, and I did a really good job of that in the first set. In the second set, she definitely changed how she was playing, and I wasn't as quick to counteract that, but she also came up with some clutch plays when I had the break points to get break points back in both sets, the second and third. So, I mean, it's a combination of myself not playing as well to get back into the match, but you have to give credit where credit's due. My opponent played better than I did today, and when it mattered in the points on her service games.
Were you as anxious as you were the earlier matches, Coco, or even more anxious coming into it because it was a semifinal? You said before.
About the same, I would say. Not much more. I think almost a little bit more settled because I had already kind of played through the nerves of that I had in the quarterfinals. But, you know, I think it's all I could do out there was try the best I could, and I felt like I did that today.
You set a goal for this year of making a Grand Slam semifinal, already achieved that. What's your takeaway for this whole tournament moving forward?
I have to actually set two new goals for this year because I achieved two of them in this first tournament. I'm very happy with starting the year this way and putting validation to the hard work that I've put into the off season and the sacrifices and all that good stuff like that. But, you know, at the same time, I'm not satisfied. Like I said, I mean, there's a disappointment factor because I'm not satisfied. And I think that's a good thing. And, you know, right now it's time to enjoy Australia Day and see what happens at Fed Cup and everything like that, because tennis is a long season. This is just a blip in the tennis season.
Coco, sorry, the second goal, would that have been top 20? Is that what that was?
No, make another quarterfinal of a Grand Slam. Did I make top 20?
I believe so.
Cool, then I got to set three.
Can you just take a second? And I know it's not easy. You just play and choose your opponent, but 36 years old to do what she did and to see that joy. I know you probably maybe didn't have a chance to appreciate it, but she was very joyful on the court afterward.
Yeah.
Just a word about Venus and how where she's at and what she said, showed.
You know, I think Venus is an unbelievable competitor. You know, putting age aside, age is just a number. And for her to be the great champion that she is a great accomplishment. It doesn't matter if she's 36 or 18 or anything like that. For me, I appreciate her as an athlete, as a competitor, as well as, you know, I would probably be feeling joy and glee if I had won the match today. And, you know, I think it shows kind of the human aspect of sports. I think that's a very important factor that sometimes gets pushed to the side is, you know, we're all human. We're not perfect out there. We're going to have some screw-ups, and you're also kind of watching us have our high moments and low moments as well. So, you know, I think it's great for her to make a final. To have an American in the final is a great achievement for American tennis, and hopefully Serena makes it there as well so we can have two Americans into the final.
Well, Venus, that was quite a celebration there at the end. Can you tell us what you were feeling at that moment? Put it in the words for us.
I know. That moment was just joy. I mean, it was a hard-fought match. If the match is, you know, 6-2, 6-2, then, you know, the moment is kind of clear that it's going to happen. But she played so well. It was never a moment where she wasn't just hitting the ball amazing and striking the ball with just such precision. So it's always very satisfying to, you know, be able to get through in such a big match against an opponent who was just on fire.
Venus, Coco said that about second set you seemed to make some adjustments that that really kind of bothered her, threw her off her game a little bit on the court. Like, can you talk through your mindset after that first set and what adjustments you might have made?
I mean, to be honest, the way she was playing the match, it was like there was, you know, I was just going to have to play defense and try to play offense whenever I had an opportunity. So I want to dictate, but the way she was playing was just almost impossible to do so. So it was just about trying to control the point in whichever way that was, if that meant that defensively I controlled the point or I was able to get a little offense, whatever it was. I mean, just be the one winning the point at the end somehow.
Can you talk about your serve as well? I mean, it started to get on, pick up as well in the second set, finding some of those clutch first serves on break points.
Yeah, in the first set, I served more conservatively, and then in the second, I just decided that I was going to go for more. It was really just a mentality at that point. And I know she's looking for a second serve, so it's important to try not to give your opponent what they want. So as the match went longer, the bigger I went on the second, and thankfully I was comfortable doing that and like executing it and just going in. So it worked. It worked.
Obviously, you come to every tournament with confidence, but with how everything went in Auckland for you and the injury coming in and the doubts, are you especially surprised that this is the tournament where you're back in a final?
I mean, honestly, all the signs didn't look that way in Auckland. I mean, of course, I dreamed of it because I definitely worked hard in the off season, but it was not a great start. I'll just say that. But still, I know I can play. It's just like you have to like try to figure out if you can get it all and line up at the same time. So that's why you get out and you try, because as long as you're continuing to try, you have an opportunity, and that's why I'm here.
Venus, as you said in the interview, you spent a lot of the match on the back foot on defense. How exactly did that feel, you know, to have to deal with, you know, the barrage of, you know, huge forehands, backhand serves from Coco?
It felt very weird because I never do that. But also at the same time, I'm versatile. I can adjust. I can do what I need to do to win a match. I also, you know, I feel comfortable when I'm uncomfortable at the same time. So even if I'm in a position where I don't want to be at, it's not going to throw me off, you know. And The good part is that, of course, my game is offensive, and like to win big tournaments, you have to have some sort of offensive game, whatever that may be. But at the same time, I also have a good defensive game, so I think the combination was, a difference in the match.
Were you prepared for that, or was that an adjustment you had to make, you know, from the start?
I mean, the way she's been playing this tournament is like knockout, like not missing and just playing beautifully. So unless, you know, the nerves get to you or just have a bad day, I had to expect that, you know, she was going to be able to execute that once again, and she did.
These sort of opportunities to play in the slam final are what you work so hard for. Did you ever think back of your mind or front of your mind, this just might, I might not have this chance again? All those might be behind me, not in front of me.
Not at all, because even the matches that I'm not winning, I'm still in control normally of every match that I have the opportunity. It's on my racket, and I'm always putting myself in a position to be where I need to be. And clearly, these matches are challenging, you know, physically, mentally, all of that. It's a challenge, but I'm up for the challenge. And also, if I'm here, then that's why I'm here. I'm not here just to hang out, you know, halfway around the world. This is a long way to come for a hangout session. So whether you win, lose, or draw, it's very focused of why you're here.
So what would it take for you to win tomorrow's final, the final on Saturday, as your matches against Serena are never ordinary?
Yeah, honestly, I probably just have to continue to play like I'm playing. And I haven't played badly. I lost a set today. I was not happy about it. but my opponent deserved that set. So what else could I do except try to get the next two? So I will try to do the same.
What do you remember from your last final here?
It was like a battle royale. It was so intense, and I just couldn't climb on top of her that day. And she was so good. It was wonderful.
Do you have many feelings of, like, revenge right now?
What does this mean?
Do you really want to win it this time?
Oh God, yeah, for sure.
Is it any special revenge feeling or something? Like?
These are words I never use.
People often speak about your rivalry with Serena. You know, they tell you it's extraordinary and all of that stuff. From your perspective, does it feel, you know, does it feel normal or does it feel that kind of extraordinary?
Well, when I'm playing on the court with her, I think I'm playing, like, the best competitor in the game. And I don't think I'm chump change either. You know, I can compete, you know, against any odds. No matter what, I get out there and I compete. So it's like two players who really, really can compete. And then also they can play tennis. And then, okay, won't be an easy match. So it's like I know that it won't be easy. And you have to control yourself, and then you also have to hopefully put your opponent in the box, and then this opponent is your sister, and she's super awesome. So it's wonderful.
It's been 7.5 years since your last slam final. Is it going to feel, do you think, like a familiar feeling, or something you have to sort of readjust to playing on that stage for those stakes? What do you expect from that atmosphere?
I haven't thought about that. Maybe it won't. I don't know. At the end of the day, my main goal will be to execute my game. And, you know, I had to do that in the first round. I had to do it in this round. So, and then the final, too. So if I can achieve that, that's more or less I'll be thinking of, and not necessarily it's the final. But, of course, you think of that, too. I mean, that's normal. But if you're especially mentally strong, you can block that out, too. So I'll try.
Venus, it's said with your courage, your longevity, your sporting ability that you're an inspiration to children, to people everywhere. Talk about your role inspiring people and the role of athletes to touch people's lives. Is that something you reflect on, or could you share a few words about that, please?
I mean, what I will say about sport, and I think why people love sport so much, is because you see everything on the line at that moment. There is no do-over. There is no retake. There is no voiceover. It's, you know, triumph and disaster witnessed in real time. And this is why people live and die for sport, because you can't fake it. You can't. It's either you do it or you don't. And people relate to the champion, and they also relate to the person also who didn't win, because we all have those moments in our life. So is it an athlete's job to inspire? Inherently, what I think athletes do at a top level inspires people, but each person takes their responsibility differently.
Venus, you and Serena have grown up, if you like, and I don't mean that disparagingly, since you last used to play Grand Slam finals. Will the dynamic still be the same? Will you see each other a lot before the final?
I don't think we'll be doing anything too much different than what we have already done these past 20 years. So, you know, no need to change anything that's already working.
How different do stakes feel, I'm wondering, from your first Grand Slam final, let's say, 1997?
I had no idea what I was doing there. But, you know, you got to get to one before you get to another, and not all of us win our first one. It's a very difficult thing to do. I was a child. I'm still a child at heart. The stakes are different. It's history, and it's a wonderful place to be at both times.
Sorry. So do you think that you're more experienced than other people, and in general, the reason why there's so many mid-30-year-olds in the finals, what does that say about experience and the triumph of experience?
I think people have realized that this is an amazing job, so it's best to keep it. I think this generation is going to inspire the rest of the generations to, you know, obviously play a schedule that's achievable, sustainable, and that you can play Grand Slam tennis for a long time. And this is beautiful for the game, because it'll be able to retain its stars for a long time, which is a great business model. Also, in terms of experience, I mean, I've won majors and played in finals at this age, I guess, and also before. Experience definitely helps. You know, being there for the first time is not easy. I mean, in the second, as two big servers, and both in the second and third set, I served second, so it's not ideal, but it worked out. So it's a first time for her. She'll learn from it. She'll grow. She's determined. So I don't see anything stopping her from continuing to be successful.
So, Venus, what part of Serena's game do you hope to exploit to the final?
I don't think there's necessarily anything to exploit. It's just about building a point that works for you, that's going to work for me. If I can build a point to, you know, win it. So every point's going to be a little different. She's, you know, she's doesn't have too many weaknesses.
Venus, what would it mean for you to win on Saturday?
Be beautiful. Be beautiful. I have to earn it. So it's not a given, and I'm going to do what I can to earn it. So I'm not thinking about, oh, what will it be like to win? I'm thinking about, what do I have to do to earn that? And that's my mentality right now. And I was so excited after that last match, but my mind changes over quickly into what's at stake next. So that's where.
But David, I mean, when we reflect on Venus Williams and we reflect on her path to this final, not just, you know, these 2 weeks in Melbourne, but really the last, you know, 5 years of her career, a player who obviously dropped outside of the top 100 after being diagnosed with an autoimmune disease, really was scrapping away. And, you know, while Serena obviously had her health issues as well before she came back, they both kind of started their comeback right around the same time. You know, obviously Serena kind of got some traction much quicker, much mm-hmm. easier. And it really felt like with Venus, you know, she was just trying to figure out her body for a long time, what her body could do, what it couldn't do. Sjögren's syndrome obviously affecting just her recovery levels and fatigue levels and, you know, what impact that has on her training and ability to prepare for tournaments and prepare for seasons. It's really just within the last 2 or 3 years that it seems like she's been able to find that perfect balance of the right schedule to be able to balance her training and to get the results and, you know, winning titles on tour again and putting herself into position at the slams. It's really remarkable, and I just remember that there were those times, maybe about 3 or 4 years ago, where she was taking those tough, you know, first and second round losses, losing to players that you're just not used to seeing a Venus Williams lose to, where, you know, the whispers began, and as, you know, as they do, and people were kind of wondering, like, why does she keep doing it? Like, what is this fun for you? You know, as a great champion with such dignity, to go out there and take these bad losses. And, you know, it was really during this afternoon when I started to kind of reflect on all those moments that, again, just the gravity of this accomplishment and this journey that will culminate on Saturday was really, really moving. I mean, it's you know, in a tournament that has had its heart, you know, heart-wrenching moments, in good ways, obviously, with Mirjana Lucic-Baroni's story as well. The perseverance that these women have shown is just mind-boggling.
No, absolutely. I think you're being a little bit generous when you're talking about whispers. I mean, I think there was a point where it was getting to a pretty fevered pitch that people were not only suggesting, recommending, begging Venus to retire, they were starting to set hypothetical dates where it would be best to retire. Well, why doesn't Venus retire at Wimbledon this year? You know, it's her favorite tournament. She's been so successful that this would be a perfect place for her to end her career. And what was always so striking to me about Venus throughout this odyssey over the last few years, and even throughout her career, is how underrated her competitiveness is. Mm. I think when you see Serena's more obvious competitive fire, it's easy to sort of lump Venus in as sort of happy to be there or more diplomatic and above the fray. This is a very gritty, determined competitor. and one who was willing to overcome these challenges that were put in front of her, and even perhaps inspired to play even better in the face of this sort of late in life, quote unquote, adversity, to the point where she's playing as well as she ever was when she was winning her major titles in the early 2000s. You know, it really is so impressive. And it's a lesson to those who maybe hear some of the chatter, who hear some of the noise, questioning their decision to continue playing, to really, really try to drown that out and look within yourself. And if you want to keep playing, there is a possibility that this best tennis is still inside of you, and only you can figure that out. You know, no one is going to be able to decide that for you. And so in that respect, it really has been a great moment for Venus to really shut all of that down and remind everybody that this is the Williams sisters that have been so consistent over the last two decades. And Kevin Fisher and I, my boss, were determining stats for the Venus and Serena rivalry. I should say it was mostly him. I added this one bullet was the fact that with Venus and Serena first having met on tour in 1998, this is one of the very few, if not only, open era rivalry to stretch into a third decade. This is the only duo that has managed to play in the 90s, the 2000s, and now the 2010s. You know, and in that way, it's just been really, really striking. Oh, and all at the same tournament, for Australian Open 1998, Australian Open 2003, and Australian Open 2017. So this has been a two-person phenomenon. And so it's been really great to have that reminder of that.
Yeah, I mean, transitioning, that's a perfect transition to talk about the other semifinal that took place today, between Serena Williams and Mariana Lucic-Brony. And let's start with Mariana Lucic-Brony, because, you know, I sent out a tweet before Venus and Coco played their match that Mariana's story of getting herself back into a slam semifinal after all of the adversity that she's been through, it's just an incredible story. It's the story of sports, or the best story in sports, I should say, of the young year so far, just in terms of, you know, you sit down. I mean, I've had to write, you know, about Venus today. I wrote about Mirjana Lucic-Brony yesterday. And as David knows, it took me a very long time to synthesize my thoughts on both of them. I think he went to sleep and woke up hours later to still be waiting for copy. But it's really hard to synthesize what these two results mean. And to put them, obviously they mean a heck of a whole lot to the individual competitors, but what they mean in the grander scheme of things, because as we all know, sports, you know, it offers a huge window into society, into individuals, into psychology. And what you were saying about Venus and about, you know, that she believed in her bones that this tennis and this sort of result was still possible despite the noise and the chatter surrounding her. I mean, that applies 100% to Lucic-Brony, who said repeatedly throughout her fortnight, I believed in my soul that this tennis was in me. It was a reminder, both Venus and Mariana, their situations just reminded me that, like, we mere mortals don't think like champions. We don't hear what they hear. You know, we don't hear what their bones cry out, what their soul says, what they feel deep inside their gut. In their, you know, sometimes it seems like a level of almost delusion, you know, when some of us look from it from the outside, like, well, how could you possibly, Mariana, it took you three sets to get through Qian Wang in the first round. That was the first win that she had had here in Melbourne in 19 years, just her second win ever at Melbourne Park. And then just to go through, knock off Agnieszka Radwanska, knock off Karolina Pliskova, you know, score two top five wins in the week to make a slam semifinal. But we just don't hear what they hear, and we don't feel what they feel. And that innate competitive drive, that innate kind of dignified belief that it's in you, that's a remarkable thing.
The Lucic-Brony story is certainly one that's very close to my heart, because when I got into tennis, obviously it was a fair bit after her first semifinal appearance at Wimbledon, and was sort of part of this lore in a way of tennis, sort of this dark past in terms of, you think of Lucic Baroni, you think of Mary Pierce, you think of Elena Dokic, these players who've had to overcome tremendous adversity. And so for years, I was watching her play qualifying at the US Open and making the main draw, and then finally having that great breakthrough in 2014, coming through qualifying, beating Simona Halep on grandstand and making the second week of a major for the first time in almost two decades. It's really just an amazing story, but it's the sort of thing where you felt like that was the ceiling, that fourth round. You didn't sense that that was, you never sensed that there was a semifinal run still there. And so for her to be able to still believe that and believe that that tennis was within her is so, it is a testament to the sort of the champion's mentality, because certainly, yes, you know, Lucic Baroni was capable of hitting some amazing shots and playing some amazing matches, but this is a level of consistency that's almost sort of at odds with her game entirely. This is not the sort of thing that she'd become known to do. It was sort of the one and done, the one big upset, and kind of having to deal with the letdowns and physical withdrawals of having that big win. And so for her to get on that roll from the very beginning of the tournament and make it all the way into the semifinals, beating high quality opposition throughout, it really truly is the story of the tournament. It was heartening, and hopefully this doesn't cause anything unforeseen, but she sounded very excited and pressed to get back onto the practice court and to really build on this result. And in sort of a similar way to seeing the way Venus responded to her first sets of good results over the last few years, sort of being inspired to do better and build on that, she seems very excited to now prove not only that this is her tennis, but this is a level of tennis that she can pull off on a more consistent basis. And to have that sort of belief at this stage in her career really is, it's so inspiring. And so it really was one of my favorite stories of the tournament thus far.
So let's hear from Marianna Lucic Baroni. You're actually going to hear two separate press conferences, because she was an absolute delight throughout this fortnight here in Melbourne. Just really articulated very well just what it felt like to get herself back into the semifinals. So you'll hear from her after she beat Karolina Pliskova in that quarterfinal. Quite the upset there, as Pliskova, the number 5 seed, and really one of those players that we wouldn't say was a favorite for the tournament, because she was in the half of the draw with Serena and would have probably had to play Serena, although she obviously beat Serena at the US Open. But she was definitely on the short list of players that people, including myself, thought might have a shot at this title. So a big win for Lucic Baroni in the quarterfinals. And then after you hear from her speak about that, you'll hear from her after today's semifinal, which was a tough, you know, straight set, too good. Serena, you're awesome. That's why your Serena loss took a mere 50 minutes. It wasn't much of a match. We were still running around in the press room trying to get post-match quotes and do interviews and things like that, you know, after the first semifinal. So I have to confess, I didn't actually see much of the match at all, maybe just like 2 points. But it was a quick one, but she recaps her fortnight quite well. And as David said, she's very excited to see what the rest of the season has in store.
Mirjana, on the court, you said this win has made everything okay in your life. Did you feel that you deserve to get this new chance in your career and because of what you went through?
Do I think that I deserve it?
No, does this sentence saying this made it everything okay, does it mean that before this win you felt something was missing, that you deserved something better?
Well, I mean, I felt like these results were missing for sure. This is what I've been dreaming about. This is what I've been training for. At 34 years old, like I said before, I have a wonderful home. I'm happily married. I would be perfectly okay being at home, enjoying my family. But I really knew deep down in my soul that I have these results in me, and to now be here and actually live these moments, it's incredible.
We saw you dig around in your bag just before the last game and pop the rosary on, and it looked like you were trying to get it close to your heart. I don't want to make you emotional, but can you talk to us a little bit about that moment and I suppose what that meant to you when you went to serve out the match?
Oof, it was really difficult because, like I said, when I took the medical time out, I wasn't really sure how I was feeling, and I felt in that moment only God can help me. And yeah, it was just something I didn't think about. It was just something that helped me be strong, and I didn't really plan it. I didn't think about it. It just was kind of a thing I did, yeah.
What do you think has allowed you to get so far? Do you feel like it's just everything's just now come together, grace of God?
Yeah, the grace of God, yeah. I mean, look, I've said before always, I always knew I have a really good game, really big game, and that there's never been a doubt about that. And, you know, it's not easy doing it. You know, there's so many great players. It's not necessarily, even when you're playing great, it's not a guarantee that you're going to go far in the tournament. There's a lot of other players playing well, and you may wake up that day maybe not hitting the ball as great as somebody else is, and it's just really small margins. And I'm really happy and lucky and grateful that things have come together here really well for me.
There's ever increasing interest in your backstory now, and you alluded to the fact that maybe one day you'll write a book about it. When is the right time to tell everyone exactly what you've been through?
Who knows? Maybe it will be, maybe it won't. I go back and forth with it. A part of it I just want to say, because people assume a lot and people don't know, so that irritates me when people assume things like injuries and things like that, and people write about, because I understand it's your guys' job to write about it, but a lot of it is speculation. And then in other times, I really want to keep those things to myself, and I don't want to tell anybody anything, and I don't want to focus that much on that. I just... I kind of want to be known as amazing fighter, a person who persevered against everything, against all odds, and that's what I take pride in. So I don't know. Who knows? We'll see.
You know, the questions are going to keep coming now.
I know they're going to keep coming. I know. And if you can see, I'm kind of diverting them a little bit, hopefully somewhat successfully. But, yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Going back to 99 and you make the semifinals, Wimbledon, just a kid, a little bit different situation this time. Can you contrast what it feels like each time?
This time, it's incredibly special, especially since it's been so long since the last time I've been in semifinals. And the struggle has been so much bigger, and nobody in this world thought I could ever be here again. Beside my closest family, my coach and my brothers, my sisters, my husband, my mom, beside my little circle, I don't think anybody believed that I could do it. And it's really fun. It's fun to prove everybody wrong, and it's fun to enjoy this for myself and live these incredible moments. It's more special this time, for sure.
Mariana, when you talk about, you know, kind of having that belief in your soul that this tennis was in you, you had that same belief when you were 15, when you came out on tour. Where do you think that kind of comes from, and did it ever waver?
It was a bit broken for a few years, for sure. When I was younger, I just believed because I won a lot, and it was that confidence you simply have because you're winning all the time. And then when you stop winning as much and you don't play for a long time, yeah, you definitely lose it a little bit. And you actually, no, not even lose it, you forget it. You forget deep down kind of who you are on the court. And that has happened to me a little bit, where I struggled for a few years. And I'm really glad that I remembered.
How did you get that memory back?
It's just perseverance. It's just kind of almost being little, I don't know what's the right word, ignoring everything and just pushing forward and kind of going through the wall, and it's not going, but you just keep pushing and you keep pushing and nothing is working and you keep pushing, and that belief that eventually it'll change. And I think that's what perseverance is, and I feel like that's what helped me get here.
Do you have any ideas on why there are so many players in their mid-30s that have made it through to the semifinals?
Everybody's so strong right now physically. Everybody works more intelligently, works harder as well. I think experience has a lot to do with it. It's difficult these days to be 16, 17 and come out and be beating these big girls. in their 30s, and I feel like just recovery has gotten better. Everything evolves in sport, from preparation to recovery to everything, and I feel like us oldies, we're not letting up that easy.
Questions, please.
How was this match for you compared to your other ones this week?
It was an amazing match from Serena. She served incredible. She played really well from the first point. And when Serena plays that well, it's really difficult to play against. And zero excuse from my side, but yeah, I was a little bit empty. It was tough. I was really trying. I don't know how it looked. I know it happened very fast. I was trying really hard to get back into it, but it was just, and you can't afford against Serena, you cannot afford to be a step slow, a step not ready and not there and not powerful and not strong, and just too good of a performance from her.
It's just tough going back to back also after the marathon you had against Pliskova.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I've played 10 matches, I think, here. Crazy, every single day. I haven't had a day off. I don't know the last time I had a day off. I played every day, and yeah, yesterday for sure. Also emotionally, it was quite draining, and it was really incredible. And physically, I mean, every day I played, and it was difficult to heal the leg. It was difficult to do everything. But I don't want to make it about that. No excuse at all. It was tough, for sure. It would have been nice to have a day off, but I didn't. I tried my best today. I feel like I have nothing to be ashamed of.
How much did you enjoy the build-up from the quarterfinals till today?
The build up
to the game, the publicity, the attention you got, etc. Did you enjoy that?
I'm a very modest person. Of course, it's nice. The most I enjoyed was playing the last point in quarterfinals, winning, and then the next 5 minutes, I think, or especially the next 30 seconds after that last point. But this is all nice and fun. But for me, it's those moments on the court, those 30 seconds to a minute of just amazing feelings.
Brianna, what were the last 24 hours like for you? What were you doing once you finished all kind of your media obligations here after yesterday? How do you process everything and how do you turn the page?
Well, I mean, it was just like any other match. It was the same as after a first round. I finished my media, I did my ice bath before, I did my recovery, massage, treatment, pretty much everything the same. Came to my room and had room service, went to sleep, really simple. And it's been the same yesterday. But of course, I mean, in the back of your mind, after that long, and I mean, you're in semifinals, you can fool yourself as much as you want, for sure. It's a bit draining on the body, on the mind, on emotions and everything. But it's been fun, for sure.
On Monday, you're going to actually surpass your previous career high ranking.
That's amazing.
Yeah, talk about why that's amazing.
Well, that's amazing because who would have thought at 34 years old I would be breaking my personal best? I mean, that's a little silly. It's crazy, but really fun. It's really nice. Like I said, I always knew I could do it, but you know, it's easy to talk and it's easy to say I belong here, I think I'm good enough to be there. Until you do it and until results speak for you, it's all talk, and I never like to talk like that. But it's really nice. I'm proud of myself. I had incredible 2 weeks, singles, doubles. I played semifinals of singles, quarters of doubles. I would sign for that every time, for sure.
Going back to 1998, what do you remember of that match against Serena, and did you envisage then that she could have had the career that she's had?
No, I am not a fortune teller, so no, and I can't tell the future, so I couldn't see that. Look, she's an incredible champion, had an amazing career. I don't remember much. It was a long time ago, our last match, but what I can tell you is that today she showed up, played amazing tennis, played the way a champ plays semifinals. She wanted it. She played amazing, and she went after it. And I wished her good luck. I hope tomorrow she'll break another record. And
it probably goes without saying a little bit, but how much has this experience spurred you now that you've had a taste of, you know, a semifinal of a Grand Slam to what you can possibly achieve now?
I mean, it's an amazing start to the year for sure. I'm so motivated. My physio, everybody's telling me, every physio, everybody's telling me, okay, so now we're gonna get a rest, we gotta fix the leg, and then we start. And I'm so excited to get on a practice court. Maybe not tomorrow, but like in a couple of days. And this gives me so much motivation. And I already texted my fitness coach, and I'm like, okay, I'll be ready in a few days. Just I'm really excited now. I want to work even harder, and I want to continue having success and playing well and enjoying this and keep going forward.
Just seeing two of the older players in the finals, Venus and Serena, does that give you hope for the future?
I don't think very far ahead, but there is definitely a change in tennis right now. Us oldies are hanging in there and doing really well, and that's nice. It's nice to see, and I feel like it's good for me. It's good for younger players also, because they don't have to feel the pressure of, oh my God, you're 21 and you didn't make it. It's the end of your life. So it's really nice. It's good for everybody. It's going to be good for tennis. Tomorrow, I'm sure it's going to be a nice final.
Does this change your plans at all? I mean, you're now top 30, getting to more main draws than you would have before.
No more qualies.
But I guess, does it change your schedule? Does it change your expectations? Or you're just planning logistically, you know?
Not much. I was planning to play the big tournaments anyway. I was just in qualies of some, and now I'm going to be in main draw, and it's going to be so nice. And I think it's going to be pretty much more or less the same. Maybe a few differences, I don't really know at the moment. But it's going to be more fun for sure.
Is there one moment in this week, in this 2 weeks, that stands out to you most?
It would have to be yesterday when her forehand sailed into the net, the moment I realized, oh my God, I'm in semifinals again. Those 2 seconds right there, just kind of disbelief. Is this actually happening? Is the score right? That was incredible. I think that moment will probably stay in my mind forever.
We saw you very quick to grab the phone and do a bit of a selfie on the court as well.
Yeah.
Can you just want us to capture the moment?
The emotion was really nice. The court was full. It was just a beautiful moment. It was just something for me I just want to have in my phone. It's just that moment, full crowd, packed court. It was really a very beautiful moment.
Any thoughts on how the final might go on Saturday?
Would you believe me if I tell you that I don't care? At all. I hope it doesn't sound the way it sounded. I'm sure it's going to be a great final. I'm sure. I'm happy for both Venus and Serena. It's something really special. What they've achieved, two sisters. Incredible, really. It's an incredible story, and I'm happy for them, and they have that special moment again. It's amazing. I'm going to be on a plane and flying home, see my family, get a little bit of rest. So, yeah, I'm done. I'm not going to watch.
Mariana, on Twitter yesterday, there was just a lot of outpouring of support and love for you. I don't think you're on Twitter.
I'm not.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious, like, have you received personal private messages, text messages?
I have so many. It's been so incredible. So many friends, former players that played before, even before my time. It's really incredible how much support I've received, and just about every person I know and don't know have accused me of making them cry, and it's been really nice. I felt so much support. I felt like the whole world is with me and supporting me and sharing this really amazing moment with me. And it's really filled my heart with so much joy.
But now we turn to the woman who we expected to be here at this stage of the tournament. We expected her to be in that final on Saturday. She was one of the tournament favorites. She's expected to be there. She's, six-time champion here in Melbourne Park. Serena Williams. And on Saturday, it's a big day. Not only is she playing her big sister in the final, but number 23, the record-breaking slam, is on the line. The world number one ranking is also on the line. If she wins on Saturday, both of those are hers. And I have to say, one of the things that has really stood out to me kind of being around Serena for the 2 weeks here, I haven't seen her this relaxed at a slam in a very long time. And, you know, she had herself a very, very tough draw, opened against Belinda Bencic, second round against Lucy Safarova, had Nicole Gibbs, then Strizova, who played a great match, a 16th seed. Then, in a match that we thought was going to be a big one, the quarterfinals against number 9 seed Johanna Konta, takes care of business, drops just 5 games. And yeah, takes care of Mariana Lucic-Brony, dropping just 3 games today. She hasn't dropped a set all tournament. She's looked great on court. Hasn't been A-plus Serena, you know, necessarily, but she hasn't needed to be. She's competed incredibly well. She's managed her emotions well. And in the press room, she's been very relaxed and calm and she's excited to face Venus on Saturday. As she said in her press conference, this is the perfect scenario.
How does it feel to get that win just pretty quickly and just kind of be able to move on and focus on the task ahead?
It felt really good because I felt like it was in my hands to force this Williams final. So believe it or not, I was feeling a little pressure about that. But it felt really good to get that win.
Was that an old familiar feeling or did it feel...
I didn't think about it, but I guess it is an old familiar feeling that I clearly forgot about. But yeah, I've definitely felt that pressure before.
So Serena, before your match, Venus obviously came off the court and the camera showed you and Lucic walking past her while she was, you know, celebrating and being happy. Has that always been easy to just look away and focus on your match rather than wanting to, you know?
Well, yeah, I think so because it's a semifinal of a Grand Slam and I was playing someone that is really good and she can play so well. So it was just a moment where, you know, in sport, but you have to focus. But it's also a great moment because you realize that we're so close and we're family. But it's that focus that, you know, you have to have in the discipline.
So I know you say, well, we'll both be a winner, Williams says, but there has to be some kind of, like, feeling like, oh, you're so close. I'm going to beat my sister or she's going to beat me, you know? I mean, that makes it a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, it definitely makes it uncomfortable, but... after everything that Venus has been through with her illness and stuff, I just can't help but feel like it's a win-win situation for me because I was there for the whole time. We lived together, and I know what she went through. So it's the one time that I really genuinely feel like no matter what happens, I can't lose, she can't lose. It's just going to be a great situation.
When you played Venus here in 2003, that was to finish off the Serena Slam. This would be to get 23 slam titles. There's a sort of nice sense of history there.
It is. It's definitely interesting. The first time was a Serena Slam, but it is what it is. And like I said from the beginning, I don't really talk about that anymore.
Serena, we've seen a lot of great dance moves of yours on TV this week. But talk about Venus's celebration, her moves. Yeah, that was pretty incredible, twirls and leaps.
Well, I only saw a twirl, but it was like a double. It was a double, it was a double turn. I was like, gosh, she's doing that on her A-team dance team. I was quite impressed because every time I try to do a double... I really struggle to do my double pirouettes. Yeah. She didn't do a pirouette. It seemed like a double pirouette. I was impressed. I was like, gosh. But then I had to go warm up. And I was like, I got to warm up for my match. It's not a lot of time in between. But I love what I did. So I was just so happy, and it was just so excited.
Those great leaps against Lindsay Davenport at Wimbledon, but
oh yeah,
but the, this was about this cool celebration.
I think so because you could really see the happiness on her face. And again, I've been there when she was down and out of it and back and in it, and I've been there for all those moments. So I just really was so happy.
You joked on the court afterwards that family might have to flip a few coins to decide where they sit. You and Venus obviously haven't been in this situation in a Grand Slam final for a number of years now. How
are you going to go about deciding?
Well, the best part is we don't have to worry about that. So that's not what we worry about. We just have to worry about playing each other. So we have the easy part.
Serena, it's been 7 years since the two of you last met in a Grand Slam final. Does this one hold any more significance, or is it any more special in any way? And also, on the other day, you mentioned you were joking about the Legends Tour. Did you guys ever think that you'd be back here again in this position?
I just feel like it's been a while, and it definitely is me. This probably is the moment of our careers so far. For me, I can definitely say for me. And, you know, it's I never lost hope of us being to play each other in a final, although it's hard because we're usually on the same side of the draw. So whenever we're on the opposite sides, I always definitely feel a lot better.
Serena, do you remember being in the stands in 1997 when Venus made her first final in New York and your reaction seeing that? Because that was a surprise run, too.
Yeah, I remember being in the stands. I felt like I played every match along with her. I was, you know, I think I was her hitting partner. I was there every moment. Yeah, it was great.
So because inquiring minds want to know, there has to be something that you two don't get along or argue about. Sisters tend to do that. At least I do with mine.
Yeah.
Oh, what would make you guys not get along?
Well, usually just rules and regulations on our dance teams. So that's basically all we argue about.
And you guys are so close, Serena. And how do you guys go about preparing for a Grand Slam final? Do you guys actually speak to each other, or is it sort of more secluded between the two camps?
No, we definitely talk. And I think now more so than anything, it's like, you know, nothing can break our family. You know, this, if anything, I think will definitely bring us closer together. And knowing that I want to see her do the best that she can possibly do, and I know that she definitely wants to see me do the best that I can do. And, you know, this is a story. This is something that I couldn't write a better ending. So this is a great opportunity for us to start our new beginning.
Will this be the last final in the Grand Slam between you and Venus?
I never say never. Look at us now.
Serena, when you look back at the matchups that you have had with Venus, like from your perspective, is there one that stands out as being the most maybe difficult, you know, maybe emotionally going into or on the court?
Not off the top of my head, honestly. Not off the top of my head. I know in the past year or two we've had some good matches that were really difficult physically for me, but just not off the top of my head.
Is it nice to be able to play these matches now, maybe now that you're both older, where it's just tennis? And maybe earlier it felt like a little bit more complicated, I suppose?
Yeah, now it definitely feels like it's just tennis, and we both want to do our best out there.
How much would it mean to you if you do come out on top?
It would mean a lot to me. I wouldn't know what to do, actually. So I'm still taking it, you know, one point at a time.
Overall, just how proud are you of the tournament you put together here? This march to the finals has been pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'm really proud of myself here. I feel like a lot of people were kind of writing me off, but it is what it is. I do best when I'm that underdog, I guess.
It seems like just about every slam you're in, there's some record at stake going back to getting 18 slams and the number 22. And is that something you're getting used to and handling better, or is it still difficult to deal with?
I'm not dealing with it right now. I just feel like I said in the beginning, I'm obviously here to win the tournament. That's the reason I come all this way. But at the same time, I don't have anything to prove. I don't have to win another match as long as I live. I just have to have fun and do what I do best. And that's what I've been doing this tournament, and I feel like overall I've been doing pretty good.
How much do you feel like you have to scout your game plan for Venus? Or do you know her like the back of your hand at this point?
I definitely think it's important to still do that. Like, this is a Grand Slam final at the end of the day. I really do feel like we will both be happy for each other no matter what happens. But still, we want to be able to go out there and play our best. So we'll probably both be watching each other's matches.
How have you managed to be, you know, have this attitude where
now, it seems like nothing really matters. You can just play. Whereas last year, maybe the year before, you had a lot of stress when you're on court at times, and now you're not.
I think just going through that made me this way now, to be honest. So I think sometimes when you're stressed out and, you know, you have to go through those moments and, you know, everything creates a better you.
When you saw Venus at her lowest lows when she was dealing with everything, and did you ever think that this day might not come for her, getting back to a slam final? And did you always think it was going to happen?
I think, of course, I was stressed out and worried if she would be okay and be able to play. And then I'd see her practice, and she'd practice so well, and she'd do so well. So I always felt like when she lost, I was almost surprised and kind of like, how did you lose? Because you're doing so well. But then at the same time, I was like, wow, you know, it's amazing that you're even out here. So it's just been really, really, I really feel fortunate to have been there for the highs and the lows and, you know, everything.
Is it safe to say that on Saturday this is the best case scenario?
Absolutely. It is definitely 100% the best case scenario that I could have ever dreamt of.
So, David, Serena does what she does. She's into yet another Grand Slam final. She will play her sister. What do you make just of the fact that that match is happening for Serena? That, you know, in order to write her name in the history books and in order to get the thing that she believes to be hers, the number one ranking back, she's got to go through her big sister. That's been the big discussion here in the press room is what are the emotions surrounding that? And is it going to complicate things for Serena, who, as I said, has been very calm throughout the fortnight?
I think it's interesting because we were talking about how tough Serena's draw was in the first half recap and how whether it held up, it really would potentially be one of her toughest title runs throughout her career. And for it to come now, for it to be her 23rd slam would make it all the more impressive. And I think this draw has really helped Serena stay up and play the kind of tennis that she needs to play to win these matches. She's had really high quality opposition throughout, a pair of top 10 players to start the tournament. Barbara Strizova in the fourth round, Johanna Konca, the informed player of the tournaments. And then though she didn't get Karolina Pliskova in the semifinals, still a potential landmine of a semifinal against Lucic Baroni, who could have taken Serena by surprise if the footwork wasn't there, if Lucic Baroni was perhaps a little bit better physically. It could have maybe made for a more complicated match, but I think by the semifinal, Serena was so dialed in that it really wasn't. I think it was pretty clear to me watching the match by game three that Serena kind of had this in the bag, that the weapons that Lucic Baroni had to bring to that match was not going to get the job done against the way Serena was playing. And obviously Lucic Baroni acknowledged that in press. For somebody who's been around as long as Serena, there's always going to continue to be full circle moments because she's traveling in pretty big circles over the last, you know, almost 30 years of being a professional tennis player. So it's in that way, it's really been great to continue to see different ways of sort of analyzing things for Serena. It's not just about the 23rd. It's about playing her sister. It's about how it's the first time that they're playing in a Grand Slam final since 2009, the first time they're playing in a final in Australia since 2003, which is what the match she won to win the Serena Slam. I mean, and then this was their first match ever was in Australia. So there's a lot of really cool historical details heading into this match. And in any other circumstance, I really do think that Serena is playing good enough to win this title. The only thing that gives me a little bit of pause is the trajectory we've seen from Serena at majors of late has sort of been the inverse of what we saw from her in the beginning of her career. Traditional wisdom stated that if you were going to knock out a Serena Williams at a Grand Slam, you better do it before the second week, because usually by fourth round, by quarterfinal, she's nails. And heading into last year's final, she was undefeated in semifinal and finals in Australia. And then we saw what happened. And that was a sort of similar run from Serena last year in terms of the level of tennis she was able to bring. Certainly, she saved a lot of her best tennis for that semifinal against Radvanska. And coming into what is going to undoubtedly be another emotional match against her sister, who's been playing very, very well, things could potentially get complicated in that final. And it will be interesting to see how Serena deals with the nerves, deals with history. I mean, this is a player who's constantly having to talk about how she doesn't feel pressure and that she's set for life and doesn't have to win another match. She doesn't have anything to prove. But it's only because it's in the face of such tremendous history that no other player has been able to come even close to achieving. This is a level of pressure that, as Patrick Mouratoglou, her coach, has said often, that no player can really relate to. So this is going to be a very interesting final, physically and emotionally, for Serena, who's been playing very well. But against her sister in what is going to be one of the biggest matches of her career, it's kind of a toss-up for me. And I do hope that it's going to be a really competitive, high-quality three-setter. And I do think the court speed will also allow for some really positive tennis along the lines of what we've seen throughout the fortnight. So overall, I'm very excited, if that answers your question. I don't really remember what it was at this point.
It definitely did answer my question. But Serena, yeah, leads the head-to-head 16-11. Gosh, what a rivalry. 16-11 over Venus. Venus has beaten her just once since 2009 in Dubai. She beat her just a few years ago, 2014, at the Rogers Cup in three sets. And their last match, which came in 2015 at the U.S. Open in the quarterfinals, was a tough three-setter. And I still remember that match at the U.S. Open. It was well played. It was intense, you know, as their matches can be, in terms of just, I think the crowd on Ash didn't know which sister they were rooting for. And so it was just a bit awkward, you know. It was a very weird vibe out on Ash. But I think that Alan Rod Laver, it's just going to be, I don't know, a bit of a celebration, you know, of the Williamses, which I'm always for, because I think that sometimes we do, especially with Serena, take for granted what we're seeing.
Mm.
And what we have seen over the course of the last, you know, over two decades. So if anything, it's just going to be lovely to see them compete hard against each other. I do totally 100% empathize and agree with your take on it, that, you know, you never know. The emotions could be weird. It could be complicated out there for Serena. But at the same time, I do think that they've gone through this dance enough times to where hopefully when it's out there, and I did get this sense in 2015 when they played at the U.S. Open quarterfinals, that it was just about tennis. They got out there, they played their heart out, they tried their best, and it resulted in a great match. And at the end of the day, they gave each other a big hug and they moved on. And I think that that's where things kind of stand, you know, in that rivalry now. It was much more awkward, as we all know, earlier on. I think everybody was trying to figure out how do they deal with it? How do we deal with it? How do we see it? You know? And then of course, there's always just going to be a bit of the projection that it's easy to engage in. You know, I mean, I know you, David, you have a younger brother. I have a younger sister. You and I are the Venuses of the situation.
Because we're both so tall.
Exactly. We are both very tall. But it's, you know, I asked Serena today, I was like, on Saturday, is it fair to say that this is the best case scenario for you? And she said, absolutely, it's the best case scenario. And it just was an answer that made me laugh a little bit, because if I think about it, if I had to play my sister for, you know, a Grand Slam title and the world number one and, you know, the stakes of everything, record breaking number 23, I would consider that the worst case scenario. Like, I would find that to be an absolutely terrible thing to ask me to do. But again, going back to my point earlier, I don't think like a champion. I am a mere mortal. I wouldn't be able to get past it. But I think that they have truly been able to kind of figure that situation out.
I mean, yeah, I can't even play practice sets against my brother. I mean, growing up, it was just, it's not about wanting the best necessarily for your sibling. It was me being out on that court wanting to win.
Yes.
I wanted to win so bad, and it would make me crazy on the court. I wasn't able to connect to anything close to my best tennis, certainly nothing resembling what Venus or Serena will be able to play, even at their worst on Saturday. So it's true. It's not a scenario that I would be rooting for under any circumstances, at least in theory. Certainly you want your sibling to succeed, but to have to then defeat them to take your rightful place in history, quote unquote, is just insane. And it really adds another wrinkle or another aspect to the Serena Williams and Williams sisters by extension story, just the level of things that they have had to encounter in sport, being women, being of color, having to compete and having your primary rival be your sibling and be your sister, is just a confluence of things that they have to deal with in their careers that no player can even begin to relate to. And yet they're two of the greatest and most successful athletes of all time. And so it really does speak to their ability to overcome adversity. And so if they've been able to do it thus far, I certainly have hope that they'll be able to do it again one more time on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, their story is just, the word that comes to mind as you were talking is just epic. There's just an epicness, a gravitas, and just, you know, over an expanse of time, across all these continents, with so much on the line whenever they play. I mean, when have they ever played, you know, really, once they got towards the top of the game, a meaningless match? You know, I mean, it just always felt like there was something massive at stake. And how much of Venus's career is impacted, obviously, by Serena's career. Who knows? Is Venus the greatest of all time, if not for the fact that her sister is the greatest of all time? You know what I mean? In terms of the number of times that she's had to come up against Serena at slams, come up against her, just like Serena has obviously molded, you know, many other great players' careers in terms of just being the ultimate stopper. You know, once you just kind of sit there and you ruminate on all the different threads that are involved in these two women's obviously interconnected lives and careers, it's really mind blowing. And I don't know, I find myself kind of getting lost in it a little bit as I would think about it. You just kind of fall into this Williams rabbit hole of all these different what if scenarios, sliding door scenarios. That is the ultimate sign of an epic rivalry. And we're going to get to see yet another installment of it on Saturday. Well, with their 28th head-to-head meeting looming in Saturday's final, I mean, David, you know, when you look back on the previous 27, as it were, and as I was saying, you know, so many times their matches have come with so much at stake at the tour's biggest tournaments, obviously at the majors as well, deep into tournaments and semifinals and finals. I mean, what are there like a handful of matches that stand out to you as being, I don't know, the tent poles of the Serena-Venus rivalry?
Yeah, I mean, you could go back as far, obviously, as their first match at the Australian Open, which was a second round match, and one of those moments in tennis history where you can look at as being the beginning of this Venus and Serena era. And then, because a year later, there they were meeting in the final of Miami, one of the biggest tournaments in tennis, and that was their first big final. You know, the fact that they played four straight major finals, the fact that even that their 2001 U.S. Open final was the first U.S. Open final that was aired in prime time. And I do believe it was in large part because of the interest toward Venus and Serena that decision was made. And it certainly set the stage for the next few years. I mean, in terms of my favorite or the best matches that they played, I mean, you can obviously look towards the 2008 U.S. Open quarterfinal where they played a really high quality pair of tiebreakers. You think about their matches and bemoan sometimes the quality or feeling like that it was a shame that these two great players weren't able to play their best against one another. But there were also a lot of great, or at least intriguing and compelling emotional matches. I mean, certainly the one in Australia to clinch the Serena Slam, even in that same year in 2003, when Venus was struggling with injury, barely even made the final because she was having issues with her abdominal and playing that great three-setter against Serena at Wimbledon. It's just been a rivalry that you've seen in almost every possible permutation on every surface. every kind of scoreline you could imagine. It's just really one of those rivalries that doesn't have, obviously, the contrast and style of a Chris Evert and a Martina Navratilova, but brings so much more in terms of the emotional dynamics, in terms of the history, and in terms of just the sheer athleticism of the two players is just really phenomenal, no matter how you look at it.
You know, you can understand the tension that they take on court when they play each other. And these are two women who grew up practicing together. They know each other's games inside and out. They know the feel of the ball off each other's rackets. They know the speed that they're going to be seeing. But they aren't clones. And that's something that is an important thing to point out. I mean, as much as they ushered in the era of power tennis into the women's game, that's just, at this point in their careers, they're not one note in any way, shape, or form, especially Serena in the last few years. Just really, she's an all-court player, and that's what Venus said. You know, there's no weakness to Serena's game. She's just been able to round out everything and sand off the edges, whereas with Venus, you know, there are a few more, you know, areas that you can exploit. The second serve can be, you know, attackable. Although she's been defending it incredibly well here at this tournament. There's a little bit more that can go wrong in some of her technique off the ground, especially the forehand can let her down a little bit. But then she has, you know, the wingspan, the net game, the ability to get herself up there and seems more comfortable up at the net than Serena does sometimes. So it's definitely an interesting, you know, it isn't a flat, you know, or pure, I guess I should say, contrast of styles. But I think that there's enough differentiation between their games to make it, you know, a fun chess match out there, that it isn't just going head to head, toe to toe, power for power, which maybe it was, you know, earlier on. But on Saturday, again, like you said, on a fast court, you know, we'll see kind of whether or not that speed, I'm not sure whether or not that plays a little bit more into Serena's game or Venus's, but, you know, based on the fact that Venus has been able to navigate this draw with, you know, the court speed where it is, it does seem that it does enhance her game just a little bit more, lets her do a little bit more of what she wants to do out there on that court.
I would also add that one of the most fascinating parts about the Williams rivalry is that every match that you look at really is a snapshot in both of their careers. And so that's what's really exciting about this upcoming match, is it really will be sort of the centerpiece in the collage of career snapshots between Venus and Serena. So I'm definitely looking forward to it.
And that's a wrap on this episode of the WTA Insider Podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, or on any podcast app of your choice to ensure you never miss an episode when they go live. Reviews are always helpful, so if you like what you've heard so far, please do leave us one. And you can also get new episode alerts by following us on Twitter at WTA_Insider. And we'll, of course, post the podcast on the WTA website at WTATennis.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.